You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Dan Feldman here. Welcome to Locked On Pistons. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. The Celtics just beat the Wizards to advance to the Western Conference Finals. I was watching at the end of the game, Nate Duncan, Danny LaRue, they do a dunked on version of a live show. It's them talking about the game, some real intelligent commentary on what's happening in the game and different things about the players, looking more from an analytical perspective, a deeper scouting perspective, just a lot of really good stuff that you don't get on the traditional broadcast. I like to watch it, listen to it at least, have it in the background, maybe have Twitter up, maybe have something else up, have the game on low volume so you can still get a feel for the crowd and the pace of the game and the excitement level. You can hear the announcer's tone, and when you want to listen in and focus your attention on the announcer, you can do that. But primarily listening to Nate and Danny, it's really good stuff, except at the end of this series, the Wizards and Celtics were exchanging all the typical pleasantries, you know, congratulations, good luck in the next round, all the usual stuff. And Nate remarked how nice that is and how that always happens, except Pistons Bulls. Now, Nate is from Chicago, and he has his viewpoint on that. And I am not from Chicago, and I have my viewpoint. And that's the Celtics did the same thing to the Pistons the year before. That's how the Eastern Conference was. The Pistons had to battle for years to get past the Celtics, and the Celtics didn't really give the Pistons respect about that in the moment in the same way the Pistons didn't with the Bulls. That was just the tradition of it. That's where the Pistons learned it from. So I have a hard time hearing about how great the Celtics were with the Wizards and what a classy organization. No, they did the same thing the Pistons did. The difference is on the telecast of that game, the replay you see forever and ever is Kevin McHale going up to Joe Dumars and saying, congratulations, go beat the Lakers. Now, the Pistons did not beat the Lakers. So I guess this was a couple years before when the Celtics did this. The Pistons didn't beat the Lakers that year, but the Celtics wanted to happen. But here's the thing. Kevin McHale did not speak for the Celtics, and really, neither did Joe Dumars speak for the Pistons. Those guys were kind of outliers. There was a connection there where Kevin McHale did that. And all the credit to Kevin McHale, and I have no problem with what the other Celtics did. You know, they can handle it the way they want. And Dumars, remember, was the one who still congratulated the Bulls, who didn't walk off the court. So my only problem is that the Pistons are remembered in infamy as the only team that would dare ever do this. And they're not. They're just not. It's happened since then. You know, it happens every once in a while, but the Pistons are the only ones remembered as doing, and it's not right. And it's also not right that people ignore the greater context of how the Bulls badmouth the Pistons publicly throughout that series. The Pistons paid a lot more respect to the Celtics. I think you even see that now. Isaiah Thomas has talked about now, the Pistons, Isaiah Thomas, that is, has talked about the Celtics in glowing terms and the respect he had and, you know, how he revered them, because they were the challenge. They were the roadblock. They're what the Pistons had to get through. And I think they appreciated that battle in a way that maybe the Bulls didn't always express publicly. I don't know what the Bulls thought internally, but they were more harsh in their comments about the Pistons being dirty and bad for the league and, you know, things that I don't think were accurate. The Pistons were a hard-nosed team, and sometimes the Bulls weren't always ready for that. But that was the challenge they had to meet, and to their credit, did. Like, eventually they did. Michael Jordan developed, Scottie Pippen developed. They became this great championship team, in part because they had to go through the Pistons. Now, part of that training, that final lesson, was the Pistons walking off the floor. It's the same final lesson they got from the Celtics years before. And so I just don't like that the Pistons are remembered and blasted for that when nobody else is. So that's my two cents for Nate, if you were listening to that, or just want to talk about how the Pistons are misremembered in history. Let's talk a little more about the Celtics, because I think there's something interesting there that it reminds me of where the Pistons were, let's say about 10 years ago, is where the Celtics were a couple years ago, and that's having a core that had competed for championships, that was aging, that was declining. And remember the question? The question was always, when to break this up? Should the Pistons break this up? And I went through like different versions at different times. You know, when the big trade that really broke it up was the Chauncey Billups, Allen Iverson deal. And I supported that trade. Obviously, that one did not work out at all. It was almost as if Allen Iverson just aged instantly that season. Like the year before was one of his best years of his career when he was with the Nuggets. And he just could not finish at the rim all of a sudden. He couldn't shoot jumpers. He had no legs. His legs were just shot once he got to Detroit. Maybe that's something the Pistons should have identified in like the first couple games of the season before that trade happened. Maybe there were more signs during his final full year in Denver than I realized. But overall, on the surface for that year in Denver, he was excellent. So that's when the Pistons made the decision to blow it up. And in hindsight, the lesson I learned from that was don't blow up a championship roster like that. That it's too hard to build a potential champion. It's so hard to get to that point. Don't blow it up. You know, let it ride it out as long as you can. And if the decline isn't great, so what? Deal with it. You made it that far. You had that championship contention run, especially because the Pistons had a title out of it, and just ride it out. The Celtics took a different approach, and it turned out to be exactly right. Infuriatingly right if you're in Detroit, because they traded Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett at just the right moment, right before those guys fell off a cliff. And there should have been more worry at two players in their mid to late 30s being traded for, you know, multiple future first round picks. The Nets are lost as a franchise because of this trade. The Celtics are in such great shape. I'm not sure there's a team in the league outside of Golden State in better shape right now. Because the Warriors are still relatively young. Like, their window's not closing. They seem to have a good amount of buy-in from their players. They're not going to lose their core. The Celtics are in awesome shape, and it's infuriating because it worked out so well for them. They have all these Nets picks, and they didn't really lose out on years of title contention. They didn't do it too quickly. They did it at just the right moment. They traded Rajon Rondo at just the right moment. They really just broke it all up at just the right moment, and it's going to be a big roadblock for the Pistons for years to come. The Celtics are in the conference finals now, and they look to be mainstays there for a little while. I just want to finish up with one more thing about the Combine and the Pistons, but first I want to talk to you about SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to, and none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and I used it just today to look at tickets for the Tigers. SeatGeek is always the first place I go to look for tickets to a game or concert. Everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparing for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work, and you save time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is graded based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get your $20 rebate on tickets, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code, enter the promo code LO Pistons. That's LO as in locked on Pistons. LO Pistons. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LO Pistons today. At the Combine, prospects will do interviews with teams and then do interviews with media. And through that process, we learn a little bit about how it goes, about which prospects have interviewed with which teams. It's mostly not a secret. Ask the players and they'll tell you. So you can see a decent list of who interviewed with the Pistons if you search around online. One thing I think we learned about the Pistons through some good questions, I'm not sure who asked these of the prospects, but I've seen them, the answers relayed enough places to have a sense, of how did the interviews with the Pistons go? Because teams take different approaches. Like one question that made the rounds this year that got asked, this is from Frank Mason from Kansas, said one team asked him, how do you want to die? How would you like to die? And that's like a weird question. I don't think there's a ton of value in stuff like that. I think oftentimes it just leads teams to confuse themselves. And I don't even know if it was the Pistons or not who asked that question. But given what else the Pistons did, I would guess it's not, because we have a sense of what the Pistons do in these meetings. And according to the players, a lot of it is breaking down film. Van Gundy also himself talked about what he wants to see, not necessarily a right answer or wrong answer, but just their thought process, how they view basketball. And I think that's what's so important. You've got to keep it on basketball. You start asking these, you know, Silicon Valley questions, the how do you want to die? Why is a manhole cover round? What if you were the size of a thumbnail and put in a blender? How would you get out? These type of questions stray too far from basketball, where you're learning some different things. You might be learning how well the player prepared to answer that question. Because a lot of these same questions get used year after year, and agents can prep players. You might be learning, like, which player thinks more about dying? You know, which player has a better sense of engineering with manhole covers? Like, those things aren't necessarily what translates to basketball. Now, teams think, like, oh, we're going to put a player on the spot and make him think through something and see how he reacts and how quickly he reacts. And there might be some value in that, but you don't know what the baseline is. You don't know how well prepared the player is for that question. And then on top of that, it's not the same type of reaction. How a player reacts during a basketball game to events unfolding in front of his eyes, the visual spatial processing is very different, or can be very different, from talking something out in an interview setting. So I think teams often lead themselves astray, and I was really glad to see the Pistons focused on having prospects break down film. Their own film, I think, is the implication I got, and you know, explaining what they're doing on plays, what they're looking for, what they see, because I think there is value in that. You can learn more about their processes from that. Now, not as much as getting them on the court, and you can do that by scouting games. You can do that by bringing them in for private workouts. I think that's the most valuable. But I do think there is value in the approach the Pistons took. As a counter to that, there was a story from the Arizona Republic a couple years ago that was just making the rounds. Kawhi Leonard did an interview with them and sweated so much that they shied away from drafting him. And I'm sure that wasn't the only reason. But it seems like that left a negative impression, that he was too easily worried and rattled and couldn't keep his composure. Well, if you've seen Kawhi Leonard play, you know that's the farthest thing from the truth. Maybe he was just really hot in that suit or in that room. Like, basketball players sweat. What was he doing before? Like, that was a team going about it the wrong way, getting a piece of information and diagnosing it the wrong way and thinking that Kawhi Leonard is too easily rattled. They ended up taking Markieff Morris. Marcus Morris went one pick later to the Rockets, eventually also to the Suns, and then, of course, to the Pistons. And that's how Kawhi Leonard ended up going to the Pacers and then to the Spurs in a draft night trade, because a team didn't really look at this pre-draft process in a sound way. I think the Pistons, the indications we can get, are looking at it better. So we'll see who the Pistons end up with. That's obviously the most important thing. We'll keep an eye on that. The lottery is tomorrow. I'll have a show before the lottery talking about the lottery looking ahead. We'll do a lottery preview show tomorrow. You can follow Locked On Pistons on Audio Boom or subscribe on iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter at Dan Feldman NBA. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is David Locke, founder of the Locked On Podcast Network. Thanks so much for tuning in to your favorite Locked On podcast. We have something really special going on here. We are the only daily local podcast format in the country, and we are one of the only places for local companies to be able to advertise on a podcast serving the fans, the listeners that want your product locally. No other podcast network does this for you. And that's why we want you to advertise right here on your favorite Locked On podcast. Our audience is 98% male. It's about 77% between the ages of 25 and 54, and also 77% between 18 and 44. So you're hitting the core demographic. If your company wants men 25 to 54 or 18 to 44, then you should advertise right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We'd love to have you. Our rates are reasonable. It's all based on the amount of listens. So you can email me, David Locke, at dlock09@gmail.com, or contact your host. We'd love to have you aboard, joining in with the great success that we're having on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.